to advertise, email podcast@thisismatchy.com.
Make some noise right now!
Enter! Podcast and Chill Network in association with Grandeur presents the Road to 1 Million Subscribers event on the 30th of July 2023 at Sunbet Arena in Pretoria. Lineup includes Kabza De Small, Makazi, Musa Keys, Mpop Pops, Celestine Dooley, Eugene Koza, and Robert Boy. This fun-filled event will include comedy, music performances, as well as a live audience conversation with Mac G, Sol Penduka, and the Ghost Lady. Tickets are now available on Quicket from 295 rands. Doors open at 6 p.m. Food and drinks sold at the venue. Come and join a milestone celebration of Black excellence with Podcast and Chill Network.
Brahman, what do you think it says about you on Wikipedia?
Well, I don't know. Do I follow Wikipedia? Unfortunately, I don't think I do. With my busy schedule, for me, ever since I joined politics, I'm always in the media for wrong reasons.
Is it?
let me share something with you.
Yeah.
In 2015...
What it says, does he think it says about Wikipedia?
Let me tell you something interesting. When did the DA approach me in 2015 to be their mayoral candidate? And I said to myself, why me? I mean, what have I got to do with politics? What does a mayor do? But then eventually realizing that this horror movie, it's real and I'm part of it. And if not me, who, you know? Mm. So I shared this obviously with my family and close the network of my friends. One friend of mine said to me, Herman, you must be mad to join this dirty world. He says, people are going to insult you, call you names, including your mother and whatever, you know. And so, fortunate enough, I entered this terrain with the full knowledge of the attacks that I will get. But I live with it. One thing, you know, I'm really and truly grateful to my grandfather, because when I lost my father at the age of two, for some reason, from the day I was born, I was someone truly special to my grandfather. He held me by the hand until he died in 1977, and taught me some fundamental issues in life, to avoid being controlled by other people. He taught me self-reliance and taking responsibility for my life. So normally for me, when people actually attack me, they actually don't realize they make me stronger, because I'm not the kind of person that would really go out there and do something that I would be ashamed of. No one in this world today, I'm 63 years of age, can hold a gun at me to say, Herman, you did this, and therefore, you know, unlike a lot of people who are scared of one day being exposed for whatever. So for me, call me whatever name, try and say anything about me. But one thing for sure is that no one can hold a gun at my life, because I've really tried. And that's a reason why I've said on many occasions that please don't double-cross Herman Mashaba, because I'll never double-cross anyone in my life. My grandfather taught me such strong values, and I live by those values, and I'm going to die with those values.
How long did you practice that?
63 years now.
The mirror is like, here we go again. We've heard this before. Hey,
by the way, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome former mayor of Joburg, Mr. Herman Mashaba.
Uncle Herm.
So this is what it says about you on Wikipedia, which was the question, by the way, but I'm glad you brought that up. It says, Herman Samteu Philip.
Philip, yes. Actually, to you guys, I don't know if you've read about me, and I've said this many times before. Mm. The name Herman was not the name my parents gave me. Mm. It was the name as a result of my grandfather. I was born on the 26th of August, 1959 in Kharamuzi, in a village called Kharamuzi. I don't know, my grandfather used to work as a security guard for the municipality of Harankua. He used to come home once a month by bicycle from Harankua to Amanskaran. I don't know why, what happened on the day when I was born to have been at home. And went around to every household. Everybody knew, called me high man. High man.
It's because you're selling weed again.
Oh, so, you're thinking you know, high man.
He called me high man. And so everyone, by the time I realized I'm a human being, everyone, including my family, they were calling me high man. But my official name in my birth certificate is Samzeo Philip. Oh, and then later on in the 70s, Kaizer Chiefs started. Kaizer started Kaizer Chiefs, and I was a big fan of Kaizer Chiefs. He had a player from Namibia, from Southwest Africa, then called Herman Bleblaski. You guys are probably young too. Herman Bleblaski. No, those are the founders of Kaizer Chiefs. Mm. Herman Bleblaski. And because I was a big soccer player in other things, so guys used to call me Bele. Mm. And then I decided, no, man, when I reached the certain age of my life, 16 or whatever, I then obviously started calling myself Herman. I only actually put it in my IDs after 1994, this Herman. Mm. So all along, if you look at, if I had my reference book, there's no Herman there. If you look at my birth certificate, there's no Herman. It is Samzeo Philip. Mm. And Herman is the name that I gave myself because this Herman was just too much for me because my grandfather was such a demanding on me that I've got to succeed in life. Oh. That failure is not negotiable. That is why it's my nature. People think I'm arrogant or something when I tell them, and I mean it, and I'm not going to apologize to anyone. Every time, everything that I do in life, I do it to win. Oh. I'm not I'm in politics not to be an MP or a mayor. I'm in politics to govern because the only way I can make a difference to the lives of South Africa is to govern. When I went into business, I went into business to be successful. Mm. When I went to school, you can ask my peers at school, at university. I mean, my room at university used to be like a lecture room. Guys would come to me, we studied together. So everything that I do in life, I do it to win. But do I always succeed? Look, it's human. There are certain things that you're going to fail. And like this project of fixing South Africa, it's a mammoth task. Am I going to succeed? One thing, I'm going to die knowing very well that if I failed, I would have tried.
We'll get into that. You said you played soccer. What position were you playing?
Number eight. I used to be number eight. And from time to time, I'll be a goalkeeper.
Is it? And were you good at it?
By my standards, I wasn't a professional player. We were just playing. I think when I was 14, 15, I had my own club called The Bates.
Yeah.
But tell this to my kids, so they think I'm talking nonsense. But every time they get people I used to play with, because you tell this to my kids that I used to be called, used to play football, I used to be called Pele, that I had my own soccer club called the Bates. So they think I'm mad. But they're beginning to understand because every time they meet people who I grew up with, actually my son studying law. One time, I was introducing him to a friend of mine I went to school with. He's a lawyer now. And he was surprised when this guy greeted me. He says, hey, hi, Pele.
You know, okay. That made sense. Yeah.
And it's someone I had not seen in many years. You know. So my son then, I said, here's someone I've not met in more than 10 years.
Yeah.
He was excited to meet me and he calls me Pele.
Yeah. So when did you start selling weed?
This is a very interesting part of my life and development. We started smoking probably when we were 14, 15. We started smoking. One of my cousins got us the youngsters. We started smoking. And then when we were in Matric, I used to be a big gambler playing dice. Every weekend, Friday like this, I tell you, 2 o'clock, I leave school, I go to go and gamble. I used to be a Knox man, big Knox man.
Number one Knox man.
Yeah, no, big Knox man, very popular Knox man. And then from time to time, you know, we're smoking this stuff. And then a friend of mine, Louis, then said one day when the dice game wasn't working well and we needed money to go to school, I said, but we're smoking this stuff and we've got a lot of friends who are also... smoking, why don't we sell it to them, you know? And we found a source. Lucky for us, within the first week or so, my mother discovered that something is not right with the two young chaps, you know? You know, when you sell dacha, you know, people come to your house, and then at the time, it was Louis and I living with my mother. And then where the guys come in to buy, one of us, the guy comes in, and then one of us must go out with him. So within the first week, my mother suspects, says, what the hell are you guys doing with all these strange people? And people smoking dacha, most of them, my mother could see, this can't be. And we decided with Louis, said, no, Louis, this is not, let's continue with the gambling. So we sold for about a week or so. But we decided, no, let's continue smoking. And I was smoking until... 1979 when I went to university. I said, no, man, this is nonsense. This is nonsense. There was nothing. We were smoking as youth, not because we were criminals. We were smoking because we wanted to be boys. We wanted to be accepted by our peers. That's why it was easy for me to stop smoking, even including cigarettes. You know? When I went to university, I said, no, the smoking. So since 1979, when I went to Teflop.
So when was the last time you had a joint?
The last time I actually tried was 92 or 91 or 19, yeah, I think 91 in Jamaica.
Jamaica?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's the strongest one. That's the strong weed.
I think 91, a friend of mine told me and our wives were in New York we decided at the time South Africans were not allowed to go into New York. Oh, wow. So we went to the Jamaican embassy to say, look, Mandela is out, freedom is coming to South Africa. Will they allow us to go to New York? And they gave us the visas. We spent a fantastic week in Jamaica.
Wow.
At a resort, at a beach resort. And then one of the days, we then wanted to hire a car because we were asking about the best place of
Bob Marley.
Yeah, they say it's about 3-4.5 hours. So we rented to the car, but then unfortunately we only had the South African driver's license. We did not have international. Mm-hmm. But then the car company managed to get us a driver. So we drove to the birthplace of
Bob Marley,
where he was, where he's also buried. Mm. So we went there. So everyone is smoking. So I had not smoked, obviously. I mean, the last time I had smoked was in 78. Yeah. So we tried, but it's still, so that's the last time I tried to smoke.
So it was too strong.
But smoking for me, to my health, it's
so it was too strong. You're like, I gotta stop this shit, man.
Yeah, look, I don't know really why I smoked. It was really more for me, pressure than anything else.
But we got a surprise for you. We got a joint for you. Bring out the joint. Where's the joint? Where's the joint? Bring out the joint. We're taking you back to Jamaica.
No, we can't. Unfortunately, I'm telling you, you know, I do have coughing all these years, and I think it's because I was for smoking in my youth, because of peer pressure, because you had to really be amongst the boys, you know. But smoking really, my body just rejected it. That's why I don't smoke. And I'm grateful for that.
Let's talk about business, man. Black like me, how do you start a company like that back in the days?
What happened is second year of my studies, one morning, the university surrounded by the police, 6 o'clock, and we asked to leave, given 6 hours. They says we must be out of here by 12 o'clock. Obviously, for 2 weeks, we were not attending classes. We had protests. And I was one of the student representative council responsible for negotiating with the university, because some of our fellow students were arrested. So when they chased us away from the university, we get home. That time I was really very angry about what was happening, and I wanted to leave the country to go to wherever country where I can get the Russians to give me an AK-47, train me how to use it, come and cause havoc. I was really very angry that because I had this dream when I was at school. You can ask any of my fellow students. I mean, I was studying to be, I thought I was going to be a professor, you know, when I left school. That's how I thought my life was going to end up as. And all of a sudden, the National Party and Apartheid government disrupted this. And God was on my side. Never got to the right context to leave the country, because you needed reliable context to leave the country. It wasn't just a question of going to the border or whatever, leave. You know? So, you know, the guy says, no, we'll get you context. And then in the process, 2 months later, the university reopened. I said, no, I'm not going back there. I don't want to focus on leaving the country. And then 2 months later, the university's open, everyone is back. And I decided, no, I can't just sit back at home, not do anything. That's when I got my first job with Spa Pretoria. I worked for them for 7 months as a dispatch clerk. While working for Motani to go getting the experience, I got a job with Motani Industries. I worked for them for 23 months. I worked actually in my life for a salary for 30 months. And then while I was with Motani, then at 10:22, then I realized, Herman, my grandfather said, I've got to succeed in life. I cannot be like everybody else. And now education, my education has been disrupted. I'm unable to leave the country. And now I'm not going to work like my father made it clear. My grandfather made it clear to me not to be like everybody else. So I then decided I must go into business. But now going into business, those days, the apartheid government said, as a black person, you can't go in business. I don't come from a business family. I come from a very poor family. I lived a big part of my youth in a tin house, two bedroom. I was raised in a childhood household by my sisters, the senior one, 13 years. My mother was a domestic worker here in Johannesburg. But I decided I'm going to be a trader. You know, coming from the time when I was in matric playing dice, you know, I said, no, man, to making money, it's actually something close to my heart. People are always looking for something to buy. And I decided I'm going to be a commission sales rep. But then to be a commission sales rep, I needed to buy a car.
Okay.
Yeah, but then I'm telling you, God gave me the wisdom to say, Herman, you buy a car with the type of life you are leading, it's very dangerous, because as boys, we used to love girlfriends. I mean, you used to have 5, 6, 10 girlfriends.
You had 10
in one time.
You had 10.
You know, sometimes
you're a rock star.
No. I mean, it was our lives. Then I said, no, man, this is dangerous. If I buy a car with all these bad friends around, this is not the type of...
Do they all know, all 10 of them?
No,
they know.
We always deny.
He's not her man. He's their man.
Yeah, you know, that's why, you know, I always tell people that the only time Herman ever lied was to lie to girlfriends when they asked me, you've got a relationship with us, and I will deny it.
Wow.
So, and
is that what inspired Action SA?
No, what I'm telling you, I'm telling you that my wife played such a key role in my life. I think God gave me this wisdom to say, look, for you to go into business, you need stability.
Mm.
And there was one of many girlfriends I was dating. I said, this one
is the one.
Is the one. I was 22.
What was special about it?
Oh, she challenges, was 20. She challenges me. I liked her company. Mm. You know, I'm a strong-willed individual.
Of course.
So, you know, some of the girls, they're just happy to be with you. You're going to the Shebeen.
Were you guys popping bottles at those times?
The way what?
Popping bottles.
But, yeah, no. We used to buy a quart that at the time was 65 cents. So I then felt, before buying the car, I said, no, I need stability in my life. I got married. And I'm so grateful. Here is it. I'm married to my wife over 41 years.
Wow. Whoa, man. Wow.
Beautiful.
Wow.
And the thing
that's
is...
That's longer than we've been alive, so...
And then...
Hey, dude.
And I do a reflection on my life. Honestly, my wife deserves...
Let's pull up your chair so people can see.
We'll say your chair.
Oh, yeah, okay. Just pull up his chair there and look on the side.
Is it okay?
Just go up a bit. Yeah.
Okay. Oh. You know,
so we have to start that all over again now. So we'll start again.
Oh, okay.
No. We don't do that over here. We just move on. He's just pulling your leg. Just pulling your leg.
So what I'm saying is, you know, for me, honestly, the guys, I'm so grateful to my wife because she protected me from myself. Mm. I was a danger to myself, you know, and how at the age of 22 had the wisdom to stabilize my life and I was able to pick up the right woman who today she's my lover, she's my wife, she's my friend, and she's really protected me.
Have you ever cheated on her?
In the beginning of our relationship as a man, from time to time you do stupid things, but always really respected my life, my wife, but really realized early stage of my life that it's not really worth it because I don't want to really be going home lying to my wife about stupid things. You know?
Did she ever find out and how?
No, I remember one time, by the time I already started Black Like Me, one day, because I used to travel a lot and get to the factory, and she says, one lady contacted her and said, I've got a relationship with her. Yeah. Hey, my man, I said, what the hell is, who the hell? I denied it. I said, it's nonsense.
Golden rule.
No, and those are the things that really made me, as I'm getting older and becoming a man, you realize it's just not really worth it.
And
why must I put my wife through nonsense? Honestly, it's not really fair. You know, someone who's dedicated her life to me, and I must do the stupid things. That's why, you know, later on, I try as much as possible. Not try, I do it. It's not try. It's not a question of trying. I'm happy with my wife. Actually,
since then, she never found out.
No, I do it. Actually, I remember, I think about 20 years or many years ago, I said to my wife, you see people being sued for rape and so forth. Hey. And, you know, so I said to my wife, I said, you know what? For me, for something like this to happen, anytime if I have to really sleep with another woman, I have to have two witnesses. Because I don't want to be charged for rape. But one day someone just comes out of the wood that I raped her. So I said,
so there's two people in the room.
I said, no. So for me to be able to, for any woman to sleep with me, there must be two witnesses.
Then three will accuse you of rape.
No. So that if ever it can happen. So this was just to assure her that I will not really be able to do something.
Hey, what do you think about that when people are falsely accused of rape?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes they are falsely accused also. So that is why for me, I'm saying to any woman who wants to sleep with me, you must understand, you must accept that there's going to be two witnesses who are going to watch so that I must not be accused. So I'm with such a statement, no one would want to sleep with me. I mean, because...
But what do you think about...
There has to be people actually watching the act. So therefore, I'm covered. And is it really worth worth it? Absolutely not. And I think...
But what do you think about the trend? Because it's a trend now where, you know, you go to a club, you meet a girl, you sleep with her, and then when you wake up, if you don't pay her, she says you raped her. She goes to, opens a case.
Yeah, fortunate enough, I'm at that age where I don't really go to such places.
No, but I'm saying, what do you think about that culture?
It is actually quite unfortunate. Sometimes, yes, I mean, look at our country, we're the rape capital of the world, and something that that hurts me where, you know, I personally feel rapists, first degree murder, serious drug dealers. I can tell you, for me, I call for the death penalty against such people. But at the same time, we need to really obviously get against people being accused. So for us to really, as a country, bring back the death penalty, we've got to make sure that we've got a very highly professional, competent criminal justice system. So that you've murdered someone, we've got to really have evidence beyond any reasonable doubt. If obviously you're a international drug dealer, you come in, destroy our families, we've got to have enough evidence. So that's why before you can bring the death penalty back into our system, we've got to make sure that we have a professional public service.
So we've had the death penalty before?
Yeah, we had it before during the apartheid. I mean, apartheid guys will just to murder you for having delivered a letter to someone and so forth. That's a very unfair.
What do you mean? They would kill you for delivering a letter to someone.
Yeah, as long as it was political, you know, they would say you threaten the lives of.
And then you're gone.
Yeah.
Or it's treason.
No, or treason. They'll charge you for treason. So that's why I'm saying is, but I think we must not allow and compare the apartheid evil era with what's happening. Right now, it is real. Our people are being murdered. We lose, 70 people every single day who are murdered in this country for cell phones, for literally nothing. So our women are being raped. Our families are being disrupted by drug syndicates, serious drug syndicates. When we grew up, like I said, we used to smoke. Yes. Dacha. Honest, Dacha, it didn't do anything.
Yeah, you must legalize it.
I smoked it for 4, 5, 6 years, whatever, when I was still in high school. That's why when I went to university, I stopped, and it didn't do anything to me. But you look at the kind of drugs that are being brought into our country. You know, I believe for you, youngsters still going to clubs, people can put something into your drink and you are affected for the rest of your life. And the problem with the kind of drugs that these criminals and evil people are bringing to our country, they don't just destroy our youth, they destroy families. That's why I get really very angry about this. And that's why for many years I share my life to South Africans, please be very careful when you have kids. I was born, as I said, I was raised in a childhood household. I didn't do those things because I was a criminal. I did this because I grew up in the streets, brought up by nature. So it's important to bring kids in a controlled environment. And us as parents, let's not take things for granted. Let me give you an example of the kind of life I was exposed to because of not having parents. You know, when you are, 13, 14, you wake up in the morning, there's one part of your body that's up. And you think, no, maybe I want to go to the loo. And even after the loo, no, man, this boy's man is not relaxing, you know? There's no one to tell you what the problem is. It's part of human development, you know? So you go to school and you talk to your peers and he says, no. This is a God-given the process, and how we sort it out, that's how girlfriends come into the picture. And we look at older guys. We are being advised by older guys. And now we sort this out, you know, girlfriends and so forth. But at the end of the day, we, you know, when you are brought up in that environment where you don't have parents to guide you so that you understand that your development, manage the risks and so forth. Unfortunately for us, not having parents around, and it hurts me today when I see kids being brought up without parental control.
You've got a question.
Yeah, so by 13, you were already sexually active.
No, I think you only become active 15, 16, but you start learning about these things. People tell you, and older guys, older guys are the ones.
Lift him up, this great guy.
No, the older guys are the ones who are teaching us life. No, we are not taught by our parents to really manage this. Like, if you look at other races, their kids are actually, they're even taught about this at school. For us, sex education in our school was taboo. Was taboo, you know, so...
Well, you still never told us how you started Black Like Me.
Oh, okay. So... Then become a salesperson, selling glasses, linen, and so forth. 1983, come across a company in Johannesburg in Malvern East. The business was called the World of Hair. They had a brand called Supercare. I remember in 1982 when I got married, we had a wedding, first time now to Pam. And I come across this company as looking for a commission sales rep, contacted them, went for an interview. They liked what I was doing. And I started selling hair care products. This is Supercare. Within 19 months, I was their top sales person, earning 3,000 and 4,000 rands a month. I mean, 1984 was serious money, you know? And then... my grandfather's teaching then comes back to me. Herman, you are vulnerable. This guy's, what happens if this white guy gets rid of you one day? You've built his brand. But Supercare was the number one brand, you know? And said, no, man. There was another black guy who I had recruited. I said to Joseph, no, man, we've got to start our own brand and we can't be distributors. We must make these products. But then Joseph and I had no knowledge. We were traders. We knew how to sell. But then, fortunate enough for me, the owner of the business used to like me. I used to travel a lot with him because I was his top salesman. He wanted to meet my clients. And that's something that made me worried that what if this guy knows my clients and what happens if one day he gets rid of me? You know? So I then, you know, so because of traveling with him, one day, I asked him about the risk of the business, and he said he shared very important information to me about our production guy, Johan Grill, Afrikaner guy. He says, you know, the one risk that you are facing as a business is my production guy is a good chemist, but I don't think he's going to last. So what I need to do is strengthen, make sure that I have another good person I can trust. Johan is an entrepreneur. We said Johan had been, went into liquidation 2 or 3 times. So he says, for that reason, it's an entrepreneur, he's going to leave me. Once he can get up and running again, he's going to leave me. That was what Leon Thompson told me about. So I didn't realize then this, when I conceived the idea, I said, yes, the guy that I need to talk to. The owner doesn't trust him. He's an entrepreneur, you know. I then said to Joseph, let's approach this white guy.
Oh.
And you can imagine you're taking a risk. I mean, I'm earning 3,500, 4,000 rents a month and growing. It was growing every month. So I then said to Joseph, let's approach Johan. We took a chance. I said, Johan, black women out there are ready to be pimped. You know how to make the stuff. Can we, Joseph and I, we've decided, at that time we said to them, we've decided we're going to start our own brand. Johan said, I'm in. 1984, I mean, to approach a white person, you had to have the guts like me. Johan bought into the dream. But now he says, guys, can you get the funding? We said, leave that to us. we had a client in Mabopane, Mrs. Dube. His husband was a very successful businessman. He had a very...
Black guy.
Walter Dube. So we then approached Mrs. Dube. Says, Mrs. Dube, can you introduce us to your husband? We want to start our own brand. And we've got the white guy from Supercell, who's the chemist, who's the production manager, who's willing. We want, can you introduce us to your husband? We want to sell our business proposal to him. That's how we got hold of it. Everything else is history. Walter gave us 30,000 rands January of 1985. It's in my book. Gave us a 30,000 rands loan. If you look at my business career, and I've been to lots of business schools all over the world, because my story, it's very interesting to business schools in particular. I received the highest funding model. You know, I had to give Walter the 30,000 rands. I had to repay it back to him in 3 years at prime plus 10.
Mm.
Plus, I had to give him 25% shares in the business. Because we were still young. It was roughly 24. Walter was obviously almost double. Yeah, was more than double my age. He didn't know who we are. But I said to him, I said, Mr. Dube, we've actually found a legal machine to print money. And luckily, because of how I operate, over the years,
You found a legal machine to print money. He was doing it illegally.
No.
They just found a cash cow.
So my pitch to him, my initial pitch to Mr. Dube was, Mr. Dube,
we've got a
machine to legally print money. And he says, what is it? He says, Mr. Dube, here's it. I showed him from day one as a commission sales rep selling this brand. Every month, how our commission and Joseph had his. And then we says, we've got this white guy who's making this product.
Beautiful.
Can you give us the funding? He says, how much you want? We had already worked it out with Johan. We needed 30,000 rands. Walter got us premises in Harangua Industrial Area, SBDC. The premises 200 square meters, bought a few drums and some stairs. 14th of February 1985, the first bottle of Black Like Me hit the market. Everything else is history.
The name.
But let me share something very fundamental. I paid Walter back in 7 months.
Whoa!
Damn!
You're rocking, eh?
Instead of 3 years.
No, I paid him back in 7 months.
Damn.
But what is even more fundamental, by 1990, people of Harangua and Mabopane can tell you, I built my own factory, 6,000 square meters, and I was busy with the expansion when someone bent it down. By 1990, when Nelson Mandela was released, I had my own factory, over 6,000 square meters, employing over 250. State-of-the-art factory cost me over 10 million rands. I did not owe anyone a cent.
Whoa.
I built that factory out of my own... That is why I'm saying is when I said to Walter, I found a legal machine to print money. This business was printing money.
But then
I invested state-of-the-art. I became a big industrialist, probably the biggest black industrialist in this country before 1030.
But tell me, when after the factory burned down, when you brought it up again, did you not sell 75% to Colgate?
In 1997. The fire happened on the 17th of November 1993. Someone touched my business. I mean, it's a very painful event. And luckily, because I'm someone who believes in saving, 2 weeks later, bought a factory. Now, at the time, you could buy a factory anywhere. Bought a factory in Midrand, just under 5,000 square meters, but had a nice piece of land at the back. I could expand. By 1997, when I sold to Colgate, I had already had over 10,000 square meter factory. But then I needed to expand because I was still using my own resources. The banks were not looking favorably at us as Black Bears people. And then I had offers, and I accepted an offer from Colgate, 1st of July 1997. So, so I sold 75% of the business to
Colgate. What was the offer?
Was a good offer.
SARS watching.
SARS, no, they can
beautiful
watch.
That.
They are more. They are most welcome.
How do you end up in the DA?
Yeah, what happened is 1994 voted for Nelson Mandela. Very proud of my vote. 1999 voted for Thabo Mbeki. We had a country where the apartheid government built excellent infrastructure, but only targeted at a small white community.
Yeah, for the white people. Yeah.
So we needed to expand this infrastructure throughout the country. The first big investment those people make is on armaments. South Africa at the time, we are the darling of the world. Housing was a huge challenge. Public transport system was a challenge. These guys with COSATU, they are closing businesses, that making our people unemployable. I look at the education. They are making our schools really places where they are just making our kids unemployable. You know, I really got angry, and I started raising these issues publicly. You can ask the Minister of Labor then, Tito Mboweni. Mm. Used to have discussions with him. He says, Tito, honestly, this draconian labor laws that you guys are bringing, you are going to destroy businesses, particularly small businesses. You guys are focused on big business with the resources. They can afford the best lawyers. They can afford the best legal brains to protect them against unions. But a small guy like who started like I started in 1985, I'm telling you, you're going to destroy them. And that's when I said, no, these guys are not... they're not a political party. They're looking at something. They're not in politics to save my country. They are in politics for something else. Mm. And started looking for options. And voted for the DA until, obviously, including when they asked me to be their mayoral candidate.
Do you think Helen Zille is racist?
I think Helen Zille, as far as I'm concerned, when I grew up, we used to call white liberals who believe as a white person, giving my mother an extra tendrance, they think they're doing her a favor. She's a kind of person that believes my mother or me, even when she looks at me, she still sees a boy. She doesn't see a man, and she's liberal. So she I think my own reading of her is she's the kind of white person that believes that she is superior to a black person.
So she's racist.
And a black person,
That's very racist.
It is the definition. Be superior to a black person.
I think my view is that, because her belief is that a black person can't do the right things and... only the whites. That's why when I left the DA, when she concorded with the ANC to have a motion of no confidence against me, it was such a disappointment. Talk to an ANC. I joined politics to democratically remove the ANC. And here's someone now talking to the ANC to remove me as a mayor. Instead of approaching me, if she was not happy, accusing me of using DA supporters' money in poor communities who don't vote for the DA, they don't pay taxes. And I used to say to some of these DA people to say, but guys, you are hating me. People that you are telling me, you are accusing me, calling me an EFF mayor. Do you think it's only EFF that's concerned about the plight of poor people? That's nonsense. It's an insult to me. the services that I'm providing to poor communities, they've got absolutely nothing to do. If EFF supports this, but you can't call them EFF voters. These are poor people who actually deserve to get services from government, because when you're in government, you don't only provide services to people who voted for you. You provide services to everyone, more especially the poor and the most vulnerable. Yes.
I wanted to ask you, when you were mayor, you know, on the highways, like if you check on the side of the highways, there's grass always growing there. And we don't have employment. Why don't you employ people to cut those grasses?
My goodness. I think you guys are aware. Have you quickly forgotten when I was the mayor? I introduced a project called Arisebetseng, inviting communities across the city once a month. Let's go out and...
Yeah, I remember.
I used to hold the officials accountable for service delivery. Please... I challenge anyone, look at the report I prepared as a handover for the next mayor. You look at when I took over the city of Johannesburg and by the time I left, and tell me, you judge for yourself. I don't have to really...
What do you think about the new mayor? He looks like he smokes in your Uber, eh?
Commander.
Oh, my goodness.
What do you think about you, man? It's
an embarrassment not to the ANC and the EFF and the DA, because they are the three parties that put him into power.
Yeah.
ANC, EFF and the DA, they put this man into power. It's not an embarrassment to them. It's an embarrassment to all of us South Africans. Well,
mustn't judge a book by its cover, but he just doesn't look like a mayor,
Doesn't look the part. We must call him.
Does he have any credentials? Maybe he's good. We don't know, bro.
Well, I didn't know the guy, because when I was the mayor at the time, he only came in now after the 2021 local government election, and I only served as a councillor for 2 months.
Okay,
so I don't really know the guy. I know Tapelo, the first one, yeah, Akma. He was there in 2016 when I was there. And even honestly, Kabelo was too young to really understand the dynamics. And also, it's not a question of Kabelo not being young. It's about the ANC and EFF put in someone like that, because they can't agree between the two of them who must be the mayor. So they ended up actually just really giving in someone inexperienced, ill-equipped, not ready to really be the mayor. A guy like Kabelo, you can't even put as an MMC. It's okay as a councillor, but really even put as an MMC would really be doing disservice to society.
Let's go back to the DA. You, Bongani and Musi Maimane, I heard you guys were planning a coup to take over the DA. What happened there?
It must be that whoever told you to something like that must have happened in their dreams. So, I always tell people, sometimes people bring certain things to me which they've had in their dreams. So, and honestly, tell me, how do I argue if I feature in your dream and actually for you it's real? How do I argue with something like that? I mean, it must be something that happened in someone's dream.
Okay, now I get you.
That's where it ends. I mean,
we're going to play a game now, ne? Yeah. I'm going to throw a topic at you. You must tell me the first thing that comes into your mind.
Okay, let's see.
So you got 10 seconds to tell us the first thing that comes into your mind. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm a gambler. I'm a capitalist. I'm not the one to gamble any longer, playing dice or go to casinos. If you want to get Herman Mashaba to be happy in life,
yeah,
put him in an environment where he makes money. But right now, unfortunately, I'm in another environment. Let's see what type of games.
Let's go. Grandio Premium Gin.
What kind of answer are you expecting?
The first thing that comes into your mind when you hear that.
A gin is alcohol.
It's this one. It's our brand.
Is it?
Yes.
Can you believe yesterday...
It's our black like me.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let me tell you, yesterday I had an interview with Lem and Manyatele at
702.
It was not in the studio. It was at Bryanston Country Club. And I was hungry when I got there before he arrived. So ordered something to drink, to eat. And then this is part of what, and then I ordered tea. But this is part of the drink they give you, gin. Mm. And I said, let me try. And lately, because my daughter from time to time, the age looks like gin. So I was never a gin drinker. Mm. You know, I've always a drink. Mainly whiskey or wine.
Nice.
And it looks like I'm discovering the whiskey, gin.
Yeah, that's for you. Nice. You can keep that one. You can keep that one. Next one, Slay Queens.
Slay Queens was there. I've never heard of this before. I mean, I'm 63 years old from Haramotsi. You know? So what is that? Slay Queens.
They're in your Instagram inbox. You'll see who they are. Just go to your Instagram inbox. You'll find them there.
No, you don't ask questions of kids of 20. I mean, I'm not 20. I'm 63.
Tell a bester first thing that comes into your mind.
What? Tabo Bester?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Criminality of the highest order.
Nah.
Criminality of the highest order.
Crazy, right?
All crazy. I mean, unbelievable. Incredible.
But weren't you with the G4? I saw a tweet saying you with the G4S guys.
Yeah, I went to lay criminal charge against them yesterday with the security guys. What these guys did in 2004, did a B deal with three senior ANC people. And part of the deal then allocated 16% of the shares to a staff trust. So that basically meant that all the employees of G4S are also shareholders. But this was never shared with them. Mm-hmm. That was in 2004. 2011, one of the employees comes across this trust deed document and then starts sharing it with other colleagues, saying, guys, we shareholders in this thing, but we were never told in 2004. And when they started engaging the company, unfortunately, last year they got fired, 202 of them. And they went to the B Commission. As you are aware, the B Commission is the party responsible, I mean, is the institution responsible for dealing with the question of fronting.
Mm.
No support from them. Went to the public protector, no support. That's how sometime late last year came to me. I've already spent money with lawyers writing to the B Commission to say, guys, here's a case of fronting. Eventually, their lawyers advised them to lay criminal charges of fronting against G4S. And they asked me, please, to use my influence to assist them. So I went to the police station with them, Pretoria Central Police Station, to where lay charge of fronting against G4S.
Last person that made you mad?
Who made me? The last person who made me mad, I think, was actually the betrayal by the DA in 2019.
Whoa.
When I came across.
So you haven't been mad since 2019?
No, get mad, but what I'm trying to say really made me mad was when I come across that they're having secret meetings with the ANC to have a motion of no confidence against me.
Yeah.
I mean, I said, but what kind of betrayal can this be? You know, and it's something that I'll never forget in my life.
Load shedding.
Oh, load shedding. It's crazy. That's why. What I said to you with the ANC, why I stopped.
I know you like gin, but
why I stopped voting for them instead of expanding the network. They did. I mean, when we looked at it on surface in the beginning, when they started providing electricity to places like Haramutsu, where I was born, you know, was wonderful. But I don't know whether they forgot or they didn't know. They then spend money on armaments instead of increasing the capacity of ESCOM. I think the ANC they didn't have an idea where electricity comes from. I can take you to lots of villages in the Manskraal area. Yeah, some of the houses, they've got three taps. In the beginning, you know, when I grew up in Amanskral, in our village, we had no running water from the taps. I mean, it was completely foreign. And the new South Africa came, they provided water in the houses. And then a few years down the line, the taps ran dry. Now they give a tender to another tenderpreneur. Another tenderpreneur dig up, bring in a second tap.
How?
With no source of water. Mm. So I'm telling you, there are houses. I can tell you, take you to my brother's house in Amman. There's two taps, both dry. But the second one, there's no source of of the water.
It's just a pool in the ground.
Yeah, no, they've, they dug. If you look at 15 or so years ago, in that whole area of Amanskraal, there was a massive construction, the digging hole, whatever. But at the end of the day, the comrades had tenders to provide water. But they did not take care of the source of the water.
Oh.
So, you know, this is crazy. Now look at Eskom. Eskom, instead of increasing the capacity of Eskom so that everyone can get electricity, they went out to bring the Guptas to loot it and literally rape that organization.
Do you think it should be privatized?
I think Eskom is the problem. Is not just really a simple privatization. Firstly, you've got to put in professional people to run the entity and hold them accountable. They must run it along commercial lines, firstly. I think for me, that's really what I would do. But at the same time, allow private sector to compete with Eskom.
Do you get load shedding where you stay?
Oh, a lot. Fortunate enough, I have a strong solar. In fact, I'm hoping by end of this month, my house will be
fully.
I'll be off the grid.
And then,
but at the same time, it's not something that makes me happy.
Yeah.
In fact, it makes me angry because I can't live like this. By end of this month, I'll be off the grid. I'll be off the grid, completely off the grid.
Yeah.
And last month, I had to spend a lot of money to get a 20,000 JoJo tank. Because in my area, you're lucky if once, twice a month, for 2-3 days, you don't have water because of best pipe and so forth. Because that area, I live in a complex, which used to be stand owned by one or two people. We are now 18 homes. But the infrastructure, the city's infrastructure, is the infrastructure put during the apartheid days.
Yep.
But, you know, so having the best pipes, it's frequent. So sometimes for 2-3 days, we don't have water. Now, I've now installed a 20,000 liter JoJo tank that supplies my house. So even if obviously for 2-3 days, there's no water in my neighborhood, I won't feel it. Unless obviously if it can, my JoJo tank, based on my current consumption, I can survive for 2 weeks without water.
So what do you think about the cartels eating from this load shedding?
Tell you, I'm asking South Africans, give Action SA the mandate to be in government come 2024. Which is a very good possibility. Please, South Africans, give us the mandate. You'll see what we're going to do with criminals. I can tell you, criminals will not see any mercy against me. This whole nonsense of parole, this whole nonsense of people having time in jail, I can tell you, jail is not going to be fun under Action SA. If you want peace, then don't commit crime. You commit crime against law-abiding citizens, I can tell you, it's going to be prison with hard labor. When you are sentenced to 25 years, you are going to serve 25 years. If you want, you are reformed, don't commit crime. the prison is not going to be a place where we reform criminals. So government is going to spend money to educate our kids who've been failed by the last 29 years by ANC. We need to invest in schools. We need to invest in clinics, hospitals, universities. I don't have time to spend money in rehabilitating criminals. Criminals are going to actually to work to assist us because this country does not have money to really pay for the services.
Panduka, you got a question?
What are your thoughts on alliances? Because it's always like, you know, there's people vote for a party, they run away from the ANC, vote for this, run away from the EFF. For the next thing, the same party they were running away from is now in alliance. And those never seem to get anything done.
Yeah, it's really very unfortunate because I think our people have not appreciated or have a deeper understanding of democracy. If you look at, if not all the Western democracies, they run through coalitions.
Coalitions.
Society is educated. When society in a democracy, in a real democracy, educated people, when you want to see a big voter turnout, that's when they have politicians who mess up. People go out and vote them out. You know, normally you'll see a small voter turnout when things are running smooth. They've got accountable, committed public servants. But as soon as they're not happy with you, they come out in their numbers. Whereas with us in Africa, when politicians fail us, instead of voting them out, we stay away, we say, no, our vote doesn't count. Then what happens? We then end up like here in South Africa, you end up with a criminal enterprise like ANC governing you, or alternatively, you end up being governed by a dictator, by a military junta. So that's really what it's unfortunate about Africa.
Did you ever have a time or a chance to join the ANC during your political career?
Not as a member. I voted for them, supported them.
In the early stages.
In the early stages, in the 80s when there was no white big business to support them. They used to get the support from us, but I was never a member. Only for the first time in my life to take membership of a political party was after the 2014 national elections, when 62% of the voters voted for Jacob Zuma. Oh. My goodness, I said, no, this is total madness. I wanted to send a signal, particularly to the black youth, to say, guys, please don't vote for politicians because they look like you. You know, someone might look like you, but they might have totally different value system, like Jacob Zuma. How on earth can you vote for this man? So I then decided to take a membership of the DA. At the time, with no really intention of one day becoming a politician.
Julius Malema, your thoughts on him?
Oh, my goodness. It's a product of the ANC.
Mm.
You see Julius Malema, obviously, I think it's a product of the ANC. That's why right now they're in coalition with them. But one thing I'd really give them credit. I think it is only fair. It is true. You remember after the 2016 local government elections, they didn't want me. They were prepared to support the DA on condition that this capitalist called Mashaba is not the mayor. And I said to the DA, please, where do I sign? Please, we can't lose this opportunity. And I can tell you that 3 years I was the mayor of the city of Johannesburg, the EFF really gave me the support.
Lovely.
Will I work with the EFF at national government? Absolutely. I wouldn't take that chance. But I will work with the EFF at local government level. Let me tell you why. At local government level, you prepare budget to say, this is what we're going to do. These are the streets we're going to tar. These are where we're going to provide electricity. That's where we're going to invest in Metro Police and so forth. So there's no ideological issues to be debated. So that's why working with the EFF at local government, anytime I'll work with them. But at national level, no chance, because honestly, I can't debate with a party that believes that government must own banks, government must own construction companies and bakeries and butchers. Oh. I mean, that's total madness. I mean, you'll destroy the economy. You talk about taking my property, the land must belong to the state. When you don't have proper, if you want to destroy an economy, take away property rights, because the wealth of any nation, it's actually property rights, and that's something that the EFF wants to use as their marketing tool. Unfortunately, a system like this will render Zimbabwe like a Sunday school picnic. So, for that reason, at national level, I'm saying to the EFF, we can talk anytime at local government level, but at national. Absolutely. Let's not even begin the discussion. And I'm grateful for the support that they gave me when I was the mayor of the city of Johannesburg.
So we almost have to let you go. But you've got a question, yeah?
Yeah. I want to talk about the book. So recently there was a book that was meant to be published. It was then pulled off the shelves about you, an unauthorized biography, meaning it's written independently of your influence, but it turned out that you had paid over 12 million rands to the author. Why the inflated price, and why wasn't there, you know, honesty as far as it being authorized by you?
Well, I think in the first place, where do you get this notion that it was inflated? I mean, what is inflated price? I mean, a capitalist like me, I don't just really pay for something where I don't really get value for the money. There's a reason why when this whole thing happened, I was overseas, I came back and I immediately confirmed, because this did not make sense. Prince is the one who can explain why he decided to call this project an unauthorized, when he himself, he's the one who approached me in 2018, October 2018, with a excellent proposal. And I'm really very proud of that book. And in fact, I'm happy to share with you now that that book will be out before the end of this month as a biography. As our
authorized. Original.
No. Yeah, authorized. It'll be biography by Prince Mashele, because that's a contract that he signed with me. So, and then he was going to raise the money himself, and he couldn't raise the money. And it was a great historical thing that he wanted to write about me in a context of the history of this country and so forth. And he's really done a fantastic job. Why he's decided to call it an unauthorized and not declare that I gave him a loan funding. It's the contracts are there. Remember, I issued a statement to get my loan back from the royalties, and it is in the contract. And now my lawyers and his lawyers are busy working on this to correct this. Why he misrepresented what happened, that I will leave it to him to deal with. Because for me, I gave him a 12.5 million rands loan on the basis of what he presented to me. I like the project, and it's now delivered an excellent product. You're going to be shocked. In fact, it's going to be a great learning book for you as black youth in this country. And he's really done a great job. But it's a biography funded by a loan that he needs to really repay.
Uncle Herm, how much is the book going to cost if you're going to be able to recoup 12 million from royalties of a book sale in South Africa?
No. Oh, but okay. I think that's where you talk about inflated price.
And money.
It's not a question of, there was no way, I've written two books, there's no way that you can recover your money.
Okay.
What was important for me was to make sure that I grew up, guys.
But I have to say you're laundering money.
You said you've written two books, so you knew there's no way. No way he's going to recover 12 million. So why then?
I think
grant the loan.
I think you will appreciate. I grew up in an environment where you did not have books by black people who are independent. Have you read? You will see when the book comes out.
I think the author took you to the cleaners. I mean, the laundry.
No. Look, nah, they, okay, tell me. Okay, tell me. Tell me, don't you think I have the right to spend my money the way I...
of course.
That says what it's donation.
So, no, it's... No.
It's all,
no, but I will. No, but I will get
all
some.
Of it.
But no, not all of it.
But
no,
you're an astute businessman. That's why it doesn't make sense that you'll give 12 million just to get
I need to invest in this country's history and contribute.
This is why we don't trust politicians, Uncle.
No.
Just say I'm laundering. Guys, I was laundering. What launder money?
But how can you launder money in a legal contract that is there for anyone to see? But well, how can you call it
laundering? That's why it's laundering, because we're making it legal.
Money that I've paid taxes on, I've worked for and I've paid taxes on, you know, guys, for the last 40 years I've always been one of the biggest taxpayers in this country.
How's it not laundering?
And we believe
how can you then say I buy something
it's not
and
money
then
from illicit gains? He said it's money he can account for.
So what I'm saying is
it just doesn't make sense though. How?
Yeah, well, you might really say, you know, someone might really, you're selling gin. Someone, I don't know what price is. Someone might say, no, this is expensive. I'll buy something else. So you come out with your own price, and that's what you believe your product is worth. And someone who's going to buy an expensive gin, it's his decision. It's his money. When there's a cheaper gin that people can really
so you've accepted, Uncle Herm, that you're going to lose money from this transaction?
No, I'm not going to lose. Absolutely not going to lose money.
So you're
going to recoup it? Recoup? What do you mean by recoup? I know there's no way that... there's no way I will get the full amount, but I'll get whatever amount that I will get. But...
So you lose?
But there will be... No. I've invested in the history of this country. I've invested in the history of this country so that you guys can know that there's a black man who can be born in poverty, written by someone totally independent, and make sure that he's not beholden to anyone. Because I've never been beholden to anyone.
Okay, that's sentimentally.
Because you guys, you are, as far as you're concerned, you only know of compromised black people. You it's very easy for you guys to get to know black people who are, can tell you, I used to smoke dacha or whatever. How many black people are there to can share this with you? How many black people can tell you that they started a business with 30,000 rands loan the age of 24.
Sure.
How many black people can tell you they got married at the age of 22? They used to have lots of girlfriends and they don't hide it. How many of them do you know? So these are things that guys you guys need to know, and that's what I've invested in.
Have you ever lied during a podcast?
Lie about what? Lie about what?
Uncle Herb.
It's 2024. You wake up, President of South Africa. What are we doing as Action SA?
Lots of things. Immediately, we're in government. We have to, in the first sitting of parliament, we need to bring back the scorpions. And ensure that that we come out with a system where the head of the Scorpions, the head of the NPA, are not appointed by the president of the country. Let us, as Parliament, to pass this law. Yeah. Let's find a way where this heads of this very critical institutions are headed by independent people, because we've got to deal with the question of the rule of law. Let us ensure, as Parliament, ensure that we revise our labor laws, because they're draconian. As long as we've got this type of labor laws, South Africa will never advance. Let us ensure immediately, as South Africa, we deal with this race-based legislation. Let us ensure that we allow the skills to be the ones to really drive our economy, because once you drive our economy in that way, who's going to benefit? Poor people are going to get an opportunity to get employment opportunities, where government will get more taxes so that we can invest in building schools and in Amanskraal, in Soweto, in KwaMashu, and so forth. There's lots of things that you've got to do, and do them all at the same time. You can't just do one and say, this is my key priority. All of them are a priority. We need to immediately invest in social workers, because our nation is traumatized They've been told by the ANC government to say, leave everything to us. You don't have to work. We'll give you 100, 350 rands a month. We need psychologists to assist in ensuring that our nation is freed from dependence on others. They must be free for themselves. We need to invest in boarding schools where, over the last 20 years, ANC has produced kids without kids, a big number of them not knowing who their fathers are. So they are traumatized. So let's take them into private schools, take them away from this toxic environment so that 30 years later, we have black engineers, we have black accountants, we've got black judges and so forth, independent. That's what we will focus on.
Do you think Patrice Motsepe would be a good president for this country?
I think I'll be lying if I can say I have a comment on that. I think I'll be getting involved in something to which I'm dangerously informed about. So
Do you know him?
I don't know him personally.
You've never met him?
No, I've met and I know him, but not to that extent where I can endorse him.
I think he can save this country. Don't you think so?
Based on what, bro? Based on what?
Ki Lizayon.
Uncle Herm, there are so many political parties out there. It really looks like we're headed towards, you know, a coalition at government, at national level. We all know you're not going to work with the ANC or the EFF, probably not the DA. Who are you willing to work with at a national level via coalition, as Action SA?
I'll work with anyone at national level except the ANC. I'll never touch over my dead body. I'll work with a criminal organization. I'm very clear. I've got a difficulty with the EFF in terms of their policies. I think that is the only thing. So with the ANC, at all levels of government, I'll never work with them. Okay. Even at local government level, because they're a criminal organization. That's why the EFF, I'll work with them at local government. But at national, because of their policies, I'll never touch them. I'll work with any other political party that can commit in advance that they will never entertain working with the ANC. So that, for me, if you want to work with the ANC, then, you know, I want to work with the political parties that believe in a non-racial South Africa. I want to work with the political parties that believe in free market economy. If you believe, you expect Herman Mashaba to go into government and say government must own banks and the bakeries and so forth, please, I don't want to work with political parties of that nature. And those who are committed to fighting crime, because we have to be tough on crime. Anyone who steals public money, there's got to really be consequences. So those political parties must commit upfront that we take over within government. One of our first order of business is the re-establishment of the Scorpions.
Lovely. And in closing, what do you want to be remembered as, Uncle Herm?
As Hyman, born on the 26th of August 1959, and his grandfather called him Hyman. And that's what I want you to remember me as.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, sir. Really appreciate it, man. Make some noise for black like me.
Uncle Herm! Shout out, Uncle Herm! Thank you, Uncle Herm.
Thank you so much, guys. Keep doing the great job. And is your stuff at Gin in the stores?
No, I need to invite for you next year. You must guys, pass up with distribution.
No, guys, if there's one businessman anywhere in the world in terms of distribution, you ask yourself, how did I distribute
Black Like Me
back in the 80s with the state of emergency and so forth? That's why when I made a commitment last week when there was this whole nonsense with the book, I said to wrote to Prince with my lawyer, I said, Prince, you've breached the agreement. Give me the rights back. Luckily, it's now found a new publisher. We'll correct it. I said, you know what, Prince? I'll distribute. No, no, a publishing house can distribute products like I do. In terms of, I'm a trader. It's in my blood. If I've got a good product, obviously the product has got to be good.
It's the best gin in the world.
Look, unfortunately, because I'm in business, I can't obviously spend time with you, but I'm happy offline. You can come and engage me how I managed to create fantastic distribution network. Because a lot of the black guys make a mistake coming out with good products and they want to run before they can crawl.
That's true.
Guys, there's no way you can come out with the best product in your mind for as long as you don't have the market, you don't have people buying it. So I think what you need to do, guys, you've got to get the market first to like the product. That's the first order of business. It must not be something that comes from you. You convince yourself, because a lot of people convince themselves that my product is good when it's not really been tested. And they already want to go and spend money in distribution, want to put it in bottle stores all over the country and so forth. My guys, you'll be out of business so quickly, because you can get the distribution network that put your product on the shelf. But if you don't have a consumer buying it,
it's worthless.
No, you're going to get into trouble, because what happens if your product is in the market and there's no one buying it, 6 months down the later, the distribution network will be calling you back to say,
come get your stuff.
Come and get your stuff back, and we want our money back. And I've seen this movie so many times. And I always warn entrepreneurs like yourselves, guys, please.
Who are you black like me now?
I've got that. I'm sure you know. 2015, I sold it to my car. Sold 49% to my current partners. My family still owns the big share of the business. My wife looks after that. It's there in the public.
Wait. So if you sold 49, didn't you sell 75% to Colgate? Did you buy it back?
But don't you guys read? Do you operate on the basis of headlines?
No.
Like, okay, let me quickly tell you. Let's not work on headlines. Like you says, you overpaid. You overpaid. What happened? Started Black Like Me in January of 1985. Built my own factory in Mabopane. Factory got burned down on the 17th of November. Bought a factory in Midrand. Expanded it over 10,000 square meters a few years down the line. 1st of July, 1997, sold 75% of the business to Colgate. 1st of August, 1999, I bought the business back from Colgate.
Is it?
Uncle,
you brought it back.
Why do you think business schools are interested in my story?
Whoa.
From a multinational.
Damn.
1st of August, 1999.
You bought it from Colgate?
I bought it back from Colgate.
Yo, that's nuts. No, but it's
1st of August, I'm giving you facts. 1st of August, 1999, I bought the business back from Colgate. 2005, I sold 49.9% of the business to Amka. I closed down my factory. I'd outsourced everything to them. And that's been that arrangement up to.
Wow.
Those are facts. It's not some story coming from whatever.
That's amazing.
What happened to your partner and your seed investor, Walter Duwe?
The original guy, the two other guys I started with, Joseph Molanda. Joseph sold his shareholding in the business, I think, in 1988.
Yo!
He sold 1988-89, somewhere there. It was at the time when I was building the factory in Mabopane. He sold. And then Johan, our manufacturing guy, sold in 93, I think.
Yo.
Yeah. Mm. Sold in 93. Yo. Holter only sold when I sold the business to Colgate. That's when he took his money and ran. But obviously, the loan didn't just come from Walter. It came from Walter and a very prominent business guy in Mabopane called Uncle Nets. They had their own company called General Agencies. So the loan came from them. So that 25% Walter and Uncle Nets had 20. So they had 12.5% each in the business. The Moja family from Arankua, they're still shareholders of the business. Even to date.
How much money do you have to buy from Colgate? Uncle Herm.
Wait, yes. But were they running the company successfully though, or were they struggling?
No. Obviously, the reason I think Colgate was a good partner, but for some reason my business refused to be part of a big company, and we were losing money. So I then made them an offer to say, "Look, I'll give them a fair offer." I said, "Guys, buy my 25%, or I buy the business back." And then after a few months of negotiations, I had good corporate advisors. I ended up being the one buying the 75%.
I don't get guys like Uncle Herm who, like, personally, business-wise, they're doing well, but they still want to get in politics. Like, why that headache, bro?
But tell me, if I don't really do this job, I'm happy to share. I've said this on many platforms. I'm telling you, if I wasn't doing this job, I'll be a drunkard.
Oh.
Or I would have left this country. Mm. And living in South Africa would devastate me. Mm. It's just, for me, it's not about money. I'm in a fortunate position. I can go and live anywhere in the world.
Wow.
But
powerful.
But at the end of the day, maybe I'm naive to believe that God will punish you if you don't do the right things. And for me to take a decision to leave this country, instead of using my privileged position, God will punish me. When I took a decision to enter politics, I was in my mid-50s. And I said to my family, I said, "Look, guys, we can go and live anywhere in the world. But God has been good to me. This country and the world has been good to us as a family for all these years. The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa allows anyone to enter the political space, as much as I don't understand it. But if these fools and these crooks can do it, I can also do it." So I'd like you to give me the mandate, the permission, and the blessings. I need my family's blessing. So my family said, "We are with you. We are not going. We are not leaving the country. So we give you our full blessing." And my family has been giving me the blessing. That's why they funded this project called Action SA. If it was not because of my family's resources, you'll not really be having a political party that has really disrupted the political environment in this country. And I'm eternally grateful to my family for giving me that support. And I've seeing more and more South Africans are helping me because I'm not that rich that I can afford to fund a political party on my own. I've got more and more South Africans who share the same values
sentiment,
as I do.
Yeah.
They are coming to support us today. This morning, I just launched a project. Guys, please, 30 rands. And give us 30 rands. Our site. I'm asking South Africans, I'm not asking you for millions, just give us 30 rands because I need to ensure that we remove the ANC and we must remove them democratically. But if I did not have the financial muscle and the support and the wisdom from my family, I would not have.
How did you get the amount to the amount, 30 rand?
Yeah, well, I think we negotiated with a cell phone company to do what we are saying to the people. You SMS a number, and then with that number, then obviously you donate the difference, and then from that airtime, from your airtime, and then they will give us that money.
Beautiful.
And then I will ensure that I have every persons in this country, in Haramut, in Soweto, in Alexander, in Soweto, or here in Randburg, every street, I'll have a representative to get the 20 plus million South Africans who've chickened out of politics. We want them back in.
By the time this comes out, you would have made a big announcement this week, yeah? What's the announcement regarding?
Well, tomorrow I'm making a big announcement, acquisition. I'm sure you guys are aware. I've not announced a big announcement or acquisition in a long time. Tomorrow, I'm so glad. Great South African advocate by profession, a lady called Judy Lopez from the Western Cape, used to be the, when the DA was running that municipality, she used to be the Speaker of Council. Mm-hmm. She's a senior advocate in the country. She's joining Action SA. Announcing her on a full-time basis, because one of the ways where we're going to remove ANC is to use the courts. That's why I need good lawyers. That's why I've got people like Kutlwano. They're bringing their legal expertise into the fold. Because we want to remove the ANC. But I always say, anyone who supports Action SA, please, I don't want to see actioners burning tires in the streets, burning our clinics. Please, use democracy, use your vote to remove the ANC. So this project I've just announced, we sent to just SMS Action SA, you're listening to this number, 42646 Action SA. With that basically you are authorizing to deduct 40 rands from your airtime. Then that money will then be transferred to us. We hope we can reach, raise millions, so that this money must go towards voter education. Voter education is very important, so that South Africa must not be like other African countries to wait until such time that your country is taken over by a military dictators.
Uncle Herb, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, wonderful. Thank you, and wonderful for the engagement. Let me tell you something. Very proud of the 12 million investment that I've made, because it's something, that book, it's going to, your grandchildren are going to be happy one day reading that book. It says there was once upon a time an independent black man who doesn't stand on a fence on issues. He's happy to confront any issue, and he's not ashamed of his life. Things that I did in my youth, I did not do them because I was a criminal or I like women and whatever. I did them because it was the environment under which I was born, and I came to realize this at an early stage of my life. God gave me the wisdom, and my grandfather gave me the wisdom to make sure that I live a life of purpose. And I'm so happy, as much as I hate this job, but one thing for sure, every night I go to bed, I hate this job. Honestly and truly, I hate this job. But it's one of the most rewarding jobs on earth. Mm. Guys, I've just shared with you my upbringing in a poor environment, very poor environment. Took a decision at the age of 22. Here am I. I've got the financial independence to even take a big organizations head on. I don't stand on a fence on issues, and I have an opportunity to serve my country. I live a life of purpose. I'm on a Friday like this, the stand-up trainers and oligarchs, the red golf courses, playing golf. I'm dealing with issues. Tomorrow this time, I'll be in Enadale, in Fynetown, in Meriting. I'll be putting up posters myself. I'll be on top of, you can follow me on this thing. Tomorrow this time, I'll be putting up posters. In Fynetown, I'll be going around house to house that are making sure that people vote for us come 28th of June, so that we at XNSA can take over that ward instead of going to play golf.
Lovely. Make some noise for Uncle Herb.
Shout out Uncle Herb. Uncle Herb.
Podcast and chill. We out of here, man. Boom.
Peace.
Danko.
Welcome to Black Excellence. Do not fear, for if you do, just sip on some grandeur. And if you still do, ask ourselves, what would Mapapunzi do? Pagama chila, itlesha lefiki. Ungoyi, even when they ask you, how sabine, do not fear. For if you do, just say, Anistivi. This is the medicine of censorship. This is the pill. Which one is that one? Podcast and chill.